Welcome to the BrownsCast podcast.
Snap is back. Ball is down. The kick is blocked. They got it. Denzel Ward blocked the field goal try. Takes the ball. Gives the ball. A cutback by Chubb. He's to the 10. He's still running to the 5. He dips outside left. He's going in. Touchdown. What a run. Nick Chubb.
Thanks for tuning in to another episode of the BrownsCast. We're beyond excited to be joined today by Cleveland.com Browns beat reporter and writer Dan Lobby. Dan, thanks for joining us. How are you doing today?
Hey, thanks for having me.
So let's jump right into it. So earlier in the week, we learned that safety Ronnie Harrison will be sidelined around 4 to 6 weeks with a shoulder injury he suffered last Sunday in Jacksonville. How big of an impact do you think his absence will have on the defense?
I think it's really big because he's such a versatile piece to what they want to do defensively. And he's a guy that, you know, I think when you're going against a player like Derrick Henry, you want to have as many guys who can come up in the box and make tackles as you can. And he's one of those guys. Sorry about my dog barking in the background there. He's one of those guys that can certainly come up and help you in the run game, but he's versatile enough to play in the pass game, which you need against this Tennessee team that likes to take shots down the field, especially with A.J. Brown. So, you know, losing Ronnie Harrison is really big because he had really settled into kind of what was supposed to be the Grant Delpit role.
I completely agree, and thank you again for joining us once again. I think, especially with Denzel being out, it's going to be hard to try to contain Derrick Henry and A.J. Brown, like you mentioned, without Ronnie Harrison. He's just such a big presence. With Myles Garrett coming back, do you think he will be full go after a pretty severe case of COVID-19?
You know, we just got to hear from Myles, and, you know, as you'd expect, he kind of said that, you know, he expects to kind of give it – give it everything he's got and be able to get out there and do Myles Garrett things. You know, I'm a little more cynical about that. I do think that, you know, there have to be some after effects to this because it sounds like he had it pretty bad, had pretty bad symptoms for, you know, probably about a week there. So, you know, I don't know if we can expect Myles Garrett to do his, you know, 100% of his workload, but the reality is any Myles Garrett you can get is better than no Myles Garrett. So, you know, I would expect him to be, you know, at worst, maybe 75% of that workload. And if you can at least make sure that you've got him out there on third downs to harass Ryan Tannehill and make him move off his spots and maybe make him scramble instead of throwing the football, that's going to help this football team a ton.
Yeah, and it was kind of scary today to hear how serious his symptoms were. I mean, he was making it seem like it was really, really bad. So that's kind of scary just to hear about that. But also today, earlier in the day, we learned that Sione Takitaki, he was activated off of the COVID-19 reserve list, and he will play Sunday in Tennessee. So how big of an effect do you think he'll have on trying to stop Derrick Henry and the explosive Titans offense?
You know, well, again, to me, it's just having as many bodies as you can to throw at Derrick Henry because he's so big and so hard to bring down. You know, this happens a lot to me because I'm not the biggest guy in the world, but I just remember last year standing in that Titans locker room after that opening game and, you know, Derek being part of the group that was talking to Derrick Henry, and I was standing right next to him. And, you know, even when you're around football players all the time, he just stood out. It's like, how does anybody tackle this guy? It's incredible how big he actually is in person. So, you know, having as many bodies as you can to throw at him, and Sione Takitaki is a guy that's going to be aggressive. He's not going to be afraid to back down from trying to bring down Derrick Henry. So, you know, having bodies, that's what it's all about. And Takitaki is a guy that, you know, was starting to come on a little bit too, had that pick six against Philadelphia and was starting to play really well. So it's going to be good to have him back out there.
And he had that standout game against Philly. And I think that really showcased the player who he is. And we expected him to be last season. He didn't really get a lot of use. And I think it's, you know, really, really encouraging to see his production. While we're still focusing on defense, do you trust Joe Woods to slow down Derrick Henry in the play action game against the Titans?
I do trust Joe Woods, I'm worried about this defense just overall. Without Denzel, you know, not really knowing what you're going to get out of Myles Garrett, without much at safety this week too, I think it's just more a personnel issue. And I think that's really been kind of the issue all season long for this team. Certainly they have those, you know, marquee players in Garrett and Ward, those building block type of players. You know, you would have hoped to have had Grant Delpit, but they do go out and steal Ronnie Harrison from Jacksonville, who's a guy that I think can be here a long time if they make that decision to keep him around. So, you know, I think you've got pieces, but just overall, the defense, it wasn't a priority this offseason. This is still, you know, even though this team is really talented, this was still kind of a multi-year build, I think. And the defense is going to get addressed this offseason with draft picks, with money, all of that stuff. So, you know, I think Joe Woods can come up with something to try and slow down this Tennessee offense, but sometimes it just comes down to the guys you have. And I'm not sure if he's going to have enough guys to be able to do that.
Yeah. Just the thought of trying to stop Derrick Henry worries me a little bit about this game. And then when you have your focus set on stopping him, then they hit you with the play action, kind of like exactly what the Browns try to do with Chubb and Hunt. So we'll see what happens there. But on offense, Kadarrell Hodge, we brought him in early last year in the season. He's gone really, really under the radar, and he's made some big catches, especially last week against Jacksonville. And it was announced today that he will not play on Sunday because of a hamstring injury. Do you think that it's significant?
Strangely, I think it is. And I don't know if we would have thought we'd be saying that at the beginning of the year. Now, credit to Kadarrell. He worked his way into that third receiver slot early in training camp. And the only reason he, you know, gave it up during the season is because of injury. And since he's come back, he's been able to reestablish himself. But, you know, look, you don't have Odell Beckham. We've seen so many stacked boxes now, Nick Chubb and Kareem Hunt. If you look on the NFL's Next Gen Stats site, you know, they're always now with Odell out among the leaders of facing boxes of eight or more men. So, you know, you're feeling that loss. So just anybody out there like Kadarrell Hodge, who has some speed, who Baker trusts, and clearly it seems like Baker does trust him, it's going to hurt to not have that guy, because now you're going back to Donovan Peoples-Jones, who we remember what he did against Cincinnati. We've seen some progress, but I don't know if he's there yet to offer you everything you need out of that spot. So it just makes them thinner, you know, looking for playmakers on the outside, and they were already thin there. So it's strange to say, but yeah, they really are going to miss Kadarrell this week.
I was kind of thinking the same thing. I think the Jacksonville game, in my opinion, was supposed to be a game where we try to prep for Tennessee, and I think we should have thrown to Higgins a lot more. We should have thrown to DPJ a lot more. And I'm not upset that we gave Jarvis a big day because he really needed it. But I do think that we could have had, you know, a little bit better prep time and just kind of get us into the winning mentality for this game against Tennessee. So with all injuries aside and everything, do you think we have a chance to win this game?
I think the Browns absolutely have a chance. You know, these are very similar teams, as you mentioned. These teams are very close. They do a lot of the same things. I mean, especially offensively, even down to having a 38-year-old play caller born in the month of May. I mean, they both have that. So these teams are like mirror images of each other on offense. And then on the defensive side of the ball, they both have had their struggles. So, you know, I actually looked at Vegas line this week. I know it had the Titans favored by 6, but the over-under was in the 50s, which really surprised me. So, you know, bookmakers certainly think this thing's going to be a high-scoring game. I thought maybe it would be kind of more like the Raiders game, just a quick both teams running the football back and forth at each other. So I'm curious to see how that plays out. But I definitely think the Browns have a chance in this football game. I'm not sure if I'm going to pick them to win yet. But it wouldn't surprise me if they went down to Tennessee, because Kadarrell Hodge certainly made some headlines earlier this week when he said that the Titans aren't a super team, but he wasn't wrong. They aren't a super team. They've got flaws too, just like the Browns do.
And right after I heard him say that, it kind of worried me, is like, that's the quote that teams are looking for, that it's like, okay, we're going to use this as extra motivation. So that quote kind of scared me. And I think Vrabel acknowledged it today. I don't know exactly what he said, but I know he acknowledged it today. So I hope that doesn't backfire on us at all. But I want to talk a little bit about Denzel Ward and his injury. So his injury was a little bit like Wyatt's injury. Is that correct?
Yeah. It's a similar calf injury.
So Wyatt was out in the beginning of the year. He was out 3 weeks and then rested up through a bye week, if I remember correctly. So he was out a total of 4 weeks. So do you think it's a similar timetable for Denzel? And does he even have a shot to play against the Ravens? Or is it just going to be like a jet? He'll return the Jets or Giants or something like
that. Yeah, I mean, it really does feel very similar to the Wyatt Teller injury. And the approach has been the same, too. They're just kind of saying week to week. They didn't put him on IR or anything like that. So, you know, I think that tells me that they're hopeful that he's going to be able to return a little bit more quickly. But, you know, I don't know how quickly this is going to turn around, because unlike Wyatt Teller, who, yeah, has to be mobile, gets out in the run game, pulls, leads the way for these backs, it's just different for a defensive back, that mobility. He's got to be able to keep up with guys on the outside. He's got to be able to cut. He's got to be able to do different things that Wyatt Teller doesn't have to do. So I wonder if this has, you know, some more lingering effects for a cornerback as opposed to a right guard. And I think they'll be cautious. That's been their MO. They're going to err on the side of caution with a lot of these injuries. I'm sure they'd love to have him back against the Ravens. They get a little bit of extended time because that's a Monday night football game, but I don't think they're going to push it. If he's not ready, he's not going to play. You know, in my mind, and this is just a guess, I would maybe think the Giants game could be the first opportunity to get him back out there.
I think that'll be a good opportunity. You know, the Giants have really speedy receivers, and that's kind of where we need Denzel. And, you know, against the Ravens, I think Ravens have Marquise Brown. They also have speedy receivers, but the ball really isn't getting to them in the way that they would like it. So I'm, you know, okay if he is missing some of those games. But with that said, do you think that the Browns have a legitimate chance to take down the Ravens and, you know, maybe even further down the stretch when we have everybody healthy? Do you think they could beat the Steelers the second time?
Well, I mean, the Steelers game is interesting because it's going to come down to what the Steelers have to play for. You know, if they're still fighting for that number one seed, if they're maybe looking to go 16-0, that might change their approach to that game. If not, you know, we might get a little Myles Garrett versus Mason Rudolph rematch, which would certainly seem to favor the Browns. You know, as far as the Ravens go, it's hard for me to just kind of count them out. I know things have not been going their way. Obviously, they've had these COVID issues, but even before that, they were struggling. They weren't playing particularly well. But I just, there's something about the way they're coached, that organization, their approach. You know, they're certainly, you know, their backs are going to be against the wall in that game. I think the Browns have a better chance to beat them on Monday night than they did for so many reasons back in week one. But so it wouldn't shock me if it happened, but I guess I need to see what the Browns do against Tennessee this week. If they go to Tennessee and they compete and they look like they belong on that football field with the team that's 8-3, then I'm going to start to think, okay, maybe they can go out there and come up with a way to beat the Ravens. But I'm not sure if I'm quite ready to say that they absolutely will beat the Ravens on Monday night.
Arguably one of the biggest question marks of the year is Greedy. So we've all been talking about that. And we know as of now, he has a nerve injury in his shoulder. Do you know, like, any more information? Is he going to get on the field this year?
He's been the great mystery all season long. And, you know, I always think back to training camp when they said it was day to day. And now here we are in week 13 and he's still not out there. I think if they are able to get Greedy back on the field, it's going to be a bonus. We're so deep into this season. It would be really difficult for me to see him coming back, even if he is able to come back. Coming back and being the number two corner, you can certainly find a role for him, I'm sure. But, you know, you're settled in pretty well with Denzel Ward and Terrence Mitchell as your one and two guys. But right now, if they are able to get anything out of Greedy, that's just a bonus. I'm not really counting on it.
I think, you know, hopefully we could get Greedy back. I think if we – what we saw in the Steelers game where we had Terrence Mitchell going up against – I think he was against Deontay Johnson, and then he went up against Chase Claypool a couple of times. It was just kind of – it seemed like a mismatch. So we're definitely going to miss Greedy's speed and, you know, how he's built is going to really help us defensively. But, you know, moving on to offense, how have you assessed Baker this year? I mean, he's been kind of hot and cold. He's off and on, but I think he's, you know, really picking it up. And do you think that these end zone misses are a concern that we need to address?
You know, I think overall, the thing that's impressed me most about Baker has been kind of just embracing what they want him to do. You know, he comes into the league and he's got the, you know, he reenacts the Brett Favre picture. And, you know, he talks about how much he loves Brett Favre and he's got that gunslinger mentality. And I think that's what a lot of Browns fans really fell in love with Baker is, you know, the quick release, the strong arm, that gunslinger, fearless approach. But really, the Browns have spent a lot of this season kind of reprogramming him. And we're seeing a little more of, I know this can be sort of a triggering phrase for people, and I don't mean this in a bad way. We're seeing more of a game manager in Baker Mayfield right now. They've minimized a little bit of what they want out of him. They're making sure he doesn't turn the football over. And he's in a position where he doesn't have to make a whole bunch of throws in a game. He has to make two or three throws in a football game. And we've seen him deliver on that. You know, even going back to that 3rd and 18 against the Texans, we've seen him deliver when they've needed him to make a throw. So I think that's where the real progress is with Baker Mayfield. He's kind of learning, you know, I don't necessarily have to go out there and throw the ball 40 times and be a gunslinger. I can just take care of the football, let Nick Chubb and Kareem Hunt do a lot of the heavy lifting. And when this team needs me, I'll be there to make the throws. As far as the misses he's had, you know, the one to Higgins was weird. It just seemed like he was really hesitant to throw the football to him. And then when he did, everything was just off. and Higgins wasn't able to get up and get it. Baker's feet were a mess. It just seemed like there was some hesitation there from him. And I think that's maybe the concerning thing, not just the, not the miss necessarily, but everything that preceded it. But the reality is, if he goes out to Tennessee and he makes that throw, we're all going to forget about it. So, I mean, that's just the nature of playing quarterback.
Yeah, and it's really hard to complain about Baker not being a perfectionist and that kind of stuff, because he's just, he's the best you've had in so long. So just based off of everything you just said, I'm assuming that you think Baker is the franchise guy, because that's been a very common question as of late as well.
You know, I don't know if I guess it would depend how you would define franchise guy. You know, if you're asking me if he'll be the quarterback here for the next 10 years, you know, I don't know. I'm honestly not sure. But if you're if you mean it as, you know, the Browns maybe look at this, believe they can win football games with Baker at quarterback, believe they can continue to build around him and sort of do what they've been doing. Yeah, I think they can make that work. I still think we need to see a little more out of Baker Mayfield before, you know, I'd be willing to, after this season, give him, you know, a Deshaun Watson type contract or something like that. But you've got to be careful when you move on from quarterbacks. And I'm not saying that's even in the discussion right now. You know, this isn't a discussion about, are we going to move on from Baker after this season? It's more a discussion of long term. You know, right now you have a guy you can trust. You have a guy, you know what he can do and how to kind of game plan for him and win with him. And that's not a bad thing. And then if he continues to develop and grows into a guy that can be your quarterback for 10 years, that's great.
I was kind of on the same pathway. I think that I was looking at the quarterbacks in this draft, and it's kind of hard to pick out some people that will fall to us and then say, yes, he can replace Baker and he will fit very well in our system. I think it's just going to have to, we're going to have to wait it out with Baker. And we have Keenum for what, 3 years, I believe. Like that's, I think that's something that we can work with. But I think another very common question is, do you think the Browns are better with or without OBJ?
You know, I know that was a big topic after he got hurt. And I think you've got to have Odell Beckham out there. And I know they've won games. I know that, you know, they beat Cincinnati. Baker had one of his best games against the Bengals after Odell got hurt. But I really do think when you're going up against really great defenses, to have a guy that can stretch the field like Odell, to have a guy that can draw a safety over like Odell does, and teams have to go in and game plan for him. Even if he's not putting up Odell-type numbers, they have to game plan for him when he's out on the field. You know, I mentioned this earlier. Nick Chubb and Kareem Hunt are facing 8-man boxes so much. And I think at some point that's going to cause you a problem. And you just don't have that downfield passing game without Odell Beckham. So I don't think they're a better team without him.
I think, you know, people are going to say Jarvis is a leader. You know, we need a leader in the locker room on offense just to help Baker. And yeah, he did that in 2018. But then when we brought in OBJ in 2019, Jarvis's production fell. They were all around 1,000 yards, everything like that. So I think it's workable. But you bring up a point in the offseason, which it brings me to ask, do you think the NFL will be able to finish the season in regard to COVID-19? And how could that potentially affect the offseason for next year?
It seems like they're pretty determined to get this thing done. And they want to do it without going to a week 18 before the playoffs. I would certainly advocate, and I know it's difficult, but I would advocate for going to some kind of playoff bubble if they needed to do that. But I think they're going to figure out a way to get the Super Bowl played. And that was their goal when they set out in this thing. They've made it very clear that they're going to play games regardless. We saw what they did with Denver. We saw what they did moving that Baltimore-Pittsburgh game all over the place to get it played in week 12. Unless things just go absolutely sideways and you've got teams getting knocked out by COVID, I don't think it's going to prevent the NFL from moving forward. As far as the offseason is concerned, the cap's going to be a little bit tighter. You know, I don't know how much tighter, but you're going to start to feel some of those revenue losses and you're going to start to feel it from not having fans in the stands and things like that. So, you know, things will be a little bit tighter. It shouldn't hurt the Browns too much because they have money anyway. But, you know, teams are going to have to maneuver and, you know, maybe, and this could be good for the Browns, maybe you'll see a couple veterans here and there that wouldn't have otherwise hit the street. Now they're out there and available.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense now that you're saying that. So I want to kind of talk about Kevin Stefanski a little bit. He's obviously in the Coach of the Year talk and all that kind of stuff. But what have you seen him do differently than other coaches that have failed?
The thing that has always stood out to me about him, and even though he ended up making the decision to call the plays this year, I truly believe that he wasn't tied to being the play caller. That if he would have sat down and assessed, you know, hey, Alex Van Pelt is the guy who should call the plays, you know, I'll just be the coach, I think he would have done that. And what that speaks to me is he's more focused on being the coach, being the CEO, being the leader. You know, he talked yesterday, I believe it was, about culture and bringing in their culture. He said, it's not about changing the culture, it's about bringing in our culture. And he's just done so many things in that regard that you just see leadership from him more than anything. He's not, you know, look, he's been great calling plays. His system has been a lot of fun to watch as it's been getting put in. But he's not here because he's like the next great offensive coordinator or he was some sort of offensive genius. He's here because they identified a guy who could bring leadership and stability to this organization. And that's really what he's done well. He's brought his culture. He's hired the right people. And that's why he's got this thing pointed in the right direction. It's not about scheme. It's about what he brings from a leadership standpoint.
And I think that's what people kind of started to realize after we didn't hire Josh McDaniels. I know he was high on a lot of people's list to become our new head coach. And, you know, when Stefanski got hired and we started making all these offseason moves, at the beginning of the season, I made my record prediction like a lot of people do. I was going anywhere from 9-7 to 10-6. And then further down the line, I adjusted to 11-5. And I think I'm kind of going to sit at 11-5 right now. So what was your original record prediction and would you change
it? Well, unlike me, I think you're in pretty good shape. I got burnt a little bit last year. I said they would go 10-6 last year. And, you know, so I got burnt and I kind of hedged a little bit to being more conservative. So I went 8-8 this year just because I wasn't sure how this team would come out of a weird off season, how this coaching staff would do coming out of that weird off season. And I thought, okay, look, if they go 8-8, that's fine. You build from there. So now here they are at 8-3, you know, after 12 weeks. So look, I mean, 11 wins is in play, especially if they beat Tennessee, they can get to 11-5, but there's no reason that this team shouldn't be able to get to 10-6 at the very least. You know, you can lose to Tennessee, you can lose to Baltimore, and then all you've got to do is go to New Jersey in back-to-back weeks and beat the Giants and the Jets. And the Jets don't even want to win football games right now. So 10 wins is out there for you. 11 wins is a real possibility. Now, look, if they beat Tennessee and the Ravens, this city's going to go crazy because, you know, who knows where they can get after that. But, you know, I think you're in pretty good shape where you're at.
Yeah, you know, I'm in a similar boat as you. I said 10-6 last year, got absolutely burned by that. And then this year, I kind of was hesitant, and I said 7-9, just because I knew that if it couldn't really get much worse than that, and I knew it could only get better, so I'd be happy either way. So that's where I'm kind of at with the record prediction.
Yeah, and I'm usually really bad at record predictions, so nobody should really listen to me at the beginning of the year with that stuff.
Yeah, I was just, you know, we all have some mulligan games. I think that's where kind of a lot of us drew our record predictions at. But, you know, it happens. I think we're in a good position right now. So while we are talking about everything, let's move kind of towards the future of this team and where we're headed. As of now, looking at the offseason, what do you think our number one priority is? And who is one big name that can potentially fill that spot that we need?
Well, I'll admit that I can't really give you a name off the top of my head, but as far as kind of where I think they should go this offseason, I think you've got to focus on the defensive side of the ball. Now, again, I mentioned maybe if there's a receiver you really like and there's one that fits in that spot, maybe you would look at taking him number one to kind of begin that transition to a younger receiving group. But I would really, much like they did this past offseason where they spent a lot of their resources on the offensive side of the ball, I kind of flip that this year. And you know, I try and maybe shore up your linebacking core a little bit. You know, you'd love to have Grant Delpit and Ronnie Harrison as your safeties moving forward. You know, that's certainly a real possibility, but then you've got to figure out what to do at your other cornerback position. You know, this is a guy we talked about, Greedy Williams. This is kind of a lost year for him, and it was going to be a big evaluation year for him. So, you know, they're going to have to make a decision there. So maybe you go out and you attack that position a little bit. And then the defensive line too, you know, they drafted Jordan Elliott. So he's kind of in line. If they decide not to re-sign Larry Ogunjobi, he's kind of in line to take over that spot, but you're getting older over there. Olivier Vernon's going to be a free agent. Sheldon Richardson just turned 30, you know, and I like Sheldon Richardson. I'd love to see him play out that last year in his contract here, but you know, they've got to get some young guys on that defensive line to help out Myles Garrett a little more. So those are really kind of the areas I would focus on.
Yeah. So to me, it really seems like it's going to be a defensive offseason, getting players to come in here and fill all those gaps that you just mentioned. But when Andrew Berry first came here, he signed a ton of guys, those one-year deals, and then he kind of talked about compensatory picks that we'll get if they leave. So do you see the Browns re-signing any of those guys that they signed a one-year deal?
You know, I think they're going to value those comp picks a lot. I think that's really important. And, you know, if you look at the guys that they signed, you know, you start to wonder how they fit long-term anyway. You know, I think Carl Joseph was a little bit of a gamble. Here's a former first-round pick. You bring him in on a one-year deal. You know, Las Vegas didn't want him. See if he can come here and prove that he belongs long term. You know, I don't think he's the answer there, especially because he went out and signed and traded for Ronnie Harrison. You know, Adrian Claiborne, an older guy now, he was given a 2-year deal. So maybe you keep him around for that second year. But a lot of the guys that they brought in on 1-year deals weren't really like long term fixes. Andrew Billings is going to be interesting because he opted out. And I was actually really curious to see how he would fit in this defense. So he's going to be an interesting case, what they decide to do there. But I don't think any of these guys are really viewed as like long-term building blocks unless they came in and kind of proved that they were.
And I think that, you know, maybe we could sign B.J. Gibson back to maybe a 1 or 2 year deal again, just depending if he wants to be here, because I think he is also a leader. You see him on the field, he's always moving his hands, he's getting people where they need to be, he's talking. And he's really seemed to take that linebacker core under his wing, and you know, it's starting to show. So I would love to keep him around. And we mentioned this a little bit before, and while we're on the topic of extensions, what are your thoughts about extensions for Baker, Denzel, and Chubb?
Well, with Denzel, you know, it's a no-brainer. I think this is a guy, even though he's got a little bit of an injury history, this is a guy that when he's on the field, he's got a chance to establish himself as one of the best corners in football. I think that's a no-brainer. Even when you throw in positional value, it kind of goes quarterback, and then it kind of depends who you ask. It's either an edge rusher or a cornerback. So he's right there in that top three as far as positional value goes as well. So I wouldn't even hesitate to pay Denzel Ward. I'm in the camp that you pay Nick Chubb, and there's an acknowledgement there that a running back is like a used car. You know, he's not going to get more valuable, you know, over the years. Unlike when you sign Myles Garrett, that's kind of like buying a house. He's going to get better. He's probably going to win some Defensive Player of the Year awards. We're going to, if they extend Chubb, we're going to see a decline more than likely. Look, maybe he's Adrian Peterson, and that's not going to happen. But I'm in the camp if you bring him back because he's so important to this offense. You know, he's got a year after this, but I would extend him this offseason. Pay for those prime years, and then you can make a decision after that. And I don't think it would be that expensive of a contract. Baker's a different story. I don't know. You know, right now I would say that maybe I wouldn't give Baker an extension. I think you pick up the 5th-year option, even though it's guaranteed now. You pick that up because that gives you a lot of flexibility, and it gives you room to say, if you don't want to extend him after year 3, it gives you room to say, hey, we just want to see you in Kevin Stefanski's offense for a second year. And I think that's fair. Now, Baker could go out and light up Tennessee, light up Baltimore, win a playoff game, and this is a completely different discussion. But right now, you know, I wouldn't mind taking a wait-and-see approach and give him a second year in Stefanski's offense to prove that he can take some of those steps forward.
That's kind of where I'm at. And the city of Cleveland does not want to go through another quarterback carousel. It would just kind of, you know, defeat all the hard work that we put in. But lastly, just kind of close this out and get to know you a little bit more. If you could write for another NFL team besides the Browns, who would you choose?
You know, it's funny. I actually got that question a couple weeks ago. It's a really hard one. You know, a part of me wants to say, you know, I love like the East Coast and like, you know, the Boston area, Providence, you know, that kind of area. So I'd love to say New England, but I kind of hate to cover Bill Belichick. So I'd maybe go the opposite direction and go out to the West Coast. Seattle would be a fun place to live and cover a football team. And also Denver has always been one of my favorite cities. So that would be a fun place to also live and cover a football team.
Well, we really appreciate the time today. And if you're listening to this, make sure to go check out some of Dan's great writing on Cleveland.com. and make sure to listen to the Orange and Brown Talk podcast. Thanks, everyone, for listening, and we will see you guys next time.